must we let it end? Where does the time go? Gone too soon, my friend. And where go the echoes of our
The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
WHFR Dearborn, and we will be picking up the new WHFR journal very shortly. And now we'll have WHFR journal. Okay, Jay.
Parsons Market just coming to a close now for another Friday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. And it's really, really beautiful, really, really beautiful out here today. And we're hoping that the weather will be this great every Friday for people to come out to the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market. Don't have the theme music today, so maybe I can hum it. No,
I'm too full.
Yeah, we've been sampling the food out here at the market, and we're ready to tell you the news. So this is the new WHFR Journal, local news and views for Friday, June the 3rd, 2011. And just remember that any opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone at Henry Ford Community College, although we hope so. We're going to start. We have a couple of guests scheduled for today. Of course, they do have to get out here and arrive, and our first guest has arrived. And he's someone that I've known for many, many years at Henry Ford Community College. Like myself, he's an official retiree of Henry Ford Community College, but they can't get rid of us that easily, can they? Glenn O'Cray, formerly the Director of Financial Aid, can't say AIDS, right? You hate that, at the college. And so... Glenn, let's just first of all talk about, other than that very distinguished career helping students find money to attend college, what have you done since retiring?
I'm an adjunct instructor at college. I teach a class called College Success. It's basically a class to motivate students to learn, teaching them techniques in the process of studying, techniques in learning, time management, things of that nature. I'm on the Dearborn Historic Commission. I'm trying to make the world safe for democracy at the same time.
Well, and I should mention, too, is that adjunct faculty at colleges around the country, that's part-time college teachers, folks, like Glenn is, like I am. I was just thinking about it today in terms of numbers across the United States. Part-time college faculty are probably, as a group, on average, the most educated and the least well-paid of any group in the U.S. Again, the most education on average and the least amount of pay. But luckily, at Henry Ford Community College, a couple of years ago, we formed a union for the adjunct faculty. And that at least gives us a way to make our demands, needs known, make the argument, make the case. And Glenn, I want to commend you for volunteering to work with that group. You're vice president of a local 337 now, aren't you?
I am. It was a pleasure to get involved. And we have about 700 members. That compares with about 225 full-time staff. We refer to many of our members as Rhodes Scholars because they leave Henry Ford to go teach at Oakland Community College or Schoolcraft Community College. They have to have 3 part-time jobs to make a living.
And imagine the cost of all that gasoline to drive from one school to the other in order to try to get a living wage out of 3 or 4 part-time jobs that just really don't pay that much. We won't go into the details for our listeners, but you wouldn't believe how little they pay part-time college teachers, and, of course, no health or significant insurance benefits. But I'm hoping our union can find a way to find some policies for a small additional cost someday. And we do have a contract. We do have that protection. There's one, is it the second one being voted on now, in fact?
It is. We are going through the ratification process. We feel we got a lot of breaks for our adjunct faculty. Seniority counts, and this has not been a thing of the past. It's a thing of the present and the future.
Regular listeners to the show will know that I'm certainly in favor of unions, well-run professional unions, because I think it's the only formal, objective way to get the needs of the employees presented significantly to the employers. And, of course, partnerships between both groups should be possible for the bettering of whatever industry or service activity they're involved in. Being part of American Federation of Teachers Local 1650 when I was full-time there, what a great organization. I mean, so many things that were done there, like saving on health care costs by actually taking charge of picking the insurance plan ourselves, which now it's been ballyhooed that, ooh, the K-12 system now has that right. Well, we had it for 30 years. Doing instructor evaluations and reviews and having a system in place to get to teachers that needed help with what they were doing or had problems of some sort. Our local 1650 did that, and it's now part of the official contracts, and the school endorses it. And so, I know there may be some unions that are just out for the money or maybe even have sold out to their employers, to the corporate view, but that's not the case here at Henry Ford Community College, and the adjunct faculty union, local 337, has started out really well, just as professionally, probably because they still have people like yourself involved in that. So thank you very much, Glenn, and we're looking forward to, again, having that secure backup and support from that union as part-timers. We brought you here, though, Glenn, let me just move right on to the topic, to speak about the local Dearborn branch libraries. According to the budget suggestions from the mayor's office, they want to close, for financial reasons, the branches. There are 3 branches. It's, you might want to help me out here. Is it Snow, Esper, and Bryant, what they were right next to here? You can have, take 5 minutes if you want to. I may interrupt with some questions, but make the case for why these shouldn't be closed. I mean, that we'll still have, they're not suggesting we don't have the Centennial, which is across from Ford Motor Company in the middle of town, not really close to any neighborhoods, but that's not in danger presently. But closing these 3 neighborhood libraries is certainly on the table, and so why shouldn't we do that?
I grew up in Dearborn. I remember biking 2 miles to Bryant Library, which was then the main library, and my early years were framed between the pages of my favorite library books. I can still remember the kids' area in the basement. I remember that there was a fully finished dollhouse that was attractive not only to girls but to guys as well. And this morning when I was discussing with my brother the fact that I was going to have the interview, that was the first thing that he brought up as well, the dollhouse. I remember the first book I lost. I cried and I cried. It was a green-covered book, and I believe that it was called Great Caesar's Ghost. I had paid so many overdue fines to this library. I believe that they should name one of the wings after me. Now, I believe that all kids should have the same fine memories of books and libraries that I have had. Some 20% of Dearborn library users are under the age of 18, and the next highest category is 26 to 45, which comprise 16% of the users. So those under the age of 18 are the lion's share of the users. One of the problems with libraries is that they're intangible. How do you quantify what someone gets from a book or magazine or video? How do you evaluate the library experience from the perspective of a child, basic visitor, avid reader, or experienced library patron? Why do neighborhood libraries make a difference? If I were a child today, I don't think my parents would let me bike to the Centennial Library. It is well-placed between East and West Dearborn, but it's not part of West Dearborn, and it's far removed from most of East Dearborn residences. The reason for branch libraries, I believe, is to make books and other media accessible to patrons, regardless of their locale. As I was preparing for this interview, I began to think of the various segments of our city's governmental enterprise that are on the chopping block, the museum, parks, pools, and libraries. And I believe that each of these segments is important in building a sense of community. Neighborhoods make cities livable. I recognize the value in centralizing elements such as libraries. However, the benefits of the combination of decentralized parks, pools, and libraries jump out at me. I believe that I became attached to Dearborn not because of the beautiful City Hall, but because of what I shall refer to as York Park at the intersection of Hollander and York, Seashore Pool, the Bryant Library, and the museum. One of the things that I learned in the process of preparing for today's interview is that last year, Bryant Library added some 5,100 new library users. So there's a continuous turnover. We have to continuously remind people about books. Now, let me address the issue of the Bryant Library and its history. Henry Ford's wife, Clara, actually gave the property to the city for the endowment of the library. There's a historic value to the site. It's an anchor in this neighborhood. I live two blocks from here. I am more than charmed by the presence of the library, and I would be devastated if it were boarded up or torn down. The Bryant Library now houses the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce, which is a good marriage partner, I think. They both feed upon one another. Should you eliminate the library, you're also going to cut out part of the support for the chamber. Last year, some 6,300 people used the Bryant Library, and some 3,100 used the Chamber Welcome Center. At Esper, some 12,000 used the library, and at Snow, some 11,000 used the library. Now, should this library be closed, the property will revert back to the Ford family. If it goes back to the Ford family, it could either be boarded up or it could be torn down. I'm not sure that that's going to make the city and my neighborhood a better place. Part of our environment, part of our identity is based on our environment, and the Bryant Library is part of my environment. It's part of what makes me who I am. Now, the Esper Library serves the east end of Dearborn. and many of the residents of the East End are immigrants from an entirely different culture. If I were they, I could very well be intimidated by the thought of going to the Henry Ford Centennial Library. While it is a welcoming institution, the sheer size of it is formidable. I think that there's a greater probability that integration into American culture would occur more readily if immigrants were to avail themselves of the Esper Library rather than going to the Centennial Library or no library at all. Some might make the assumption that if all branch libraries were closed, the patrons would automatically go to the Centennial Library. While that may be true that some would do so, I believe that many would choose not to do so. I believe that many children, immigrants, and senior citizens would not go to Henry Ford Centennial Library if the branches were closed. Is there support for the Bryant Library? I'm fearful of quantifying it, but I believe that there is sufficient support. Years ago, when Michael Guido was mayor, hearings were held to determine the future of libraries, including Bryant. A good number of residents showed up, signed petitions, carried signs. Today, there still exists the Save the Bryant Library Committee, which meets once a month. I must report that others, as well as I, were threatened with arrest for picketing on city property in support of the Bryant Library. I believe that there is also support for other libraries, other branches. Now, the branch services have been whittled down in the last couple of years, but the branch libraries serve all ages within walking distance of Bryant. You have Sisson Manor and Morley Manor. And up until recently, the library also had programs for children. They offer tax forms during tax time, and they offer job search sites for the unemployed. Many who are unemployed either don't have computers or don't have the skills to navigate them. And the branch libraries, as well as the main library, help those who have difficulty not only in searching for jobs, but in securing their unemployment checks. The staff helps individuals apply for jobs over the Internet. We sometimes forget that all are not computer savvy. Today's librarians are technology instructors. Now, the branches offer a good place for students to study and do research papers. And one of the problems with the main library, and let me parenthetically say that I love the Henry Ford Centennial Library as well as Bryant, is that many parents drop their kids off there and, in effect, use the library staff as babysitters. Many older citizens don't want to deal with that issue. Patrons at the branches can download audiobooks from the branch libraries as well as from the Centennial Library. As I walk through the Bryant Library, I see the large number of children's books. I look around and see a great variety of books of nonfiction. I see many books of fiction. I see current paperbacks. I see the films and DVDs. I see the CDs. I see just a wide range of magazines. Could patrons survive without them? You betcha. Are we better educated and informed because of our branch libraries? You betcha. Now, some may ask, if not the library, where do we cut back? Well, for me, I prefer a full-service city. I'm used to families being happy with pools, parks, and libraries. I'm used to families feeling that the city is well-protected, not only by its police force, but also by its firefighters. If a millage is what it takes to maintain services similar to the ones we have now, so be it. If we are going to determine the number of dollars that we as individuals spend on entertainment, either by going to the Fairlane AMC or by renting a video, we would have to recognize that the amount that we as a city spend on library services is comparatively small, some $5.5 million a year. Now, if we have 100,000 residents and if the cost per resident is $56 a year, the family that goes to the AMC one day on a weekend can spend that amount on tickets and refreshments. I fear putting books beyond the reach of just one child, and I think that closing the library will have a negative effect on more than a few students. Let me tell you a couple of stories about how I think books influence people. I'm a vegetarian. I offer $20 to my grandkids to read Diet for New America, which tells about the suffering that animals go through to get food onto our table. They're reading the book, got discussions going about our food chain in ways you can't imagine. Now, my favorite book story is about one of my students last fall. I asked the students in my class...
I'm going to interrupt you just for a second. This is Glenn O'Cray on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. He's making the argument, folks, in a very articulate way. He's got prepared notes, and these are all going to be available posted at some library, I hope, Glenn. Now, are you going to make this presentation Monday night at the city council? He's not sure. But, you know, they might even limit folks, the presentations, to 3 minutes each. And so we're going to let Glenn finish up here. It's very well thought out, very articulate statement about the library. A lot of topics. I've been taking notes here, Glenn. It's great. But Glenn O'Cray is who you're listening to. He's the spokesperson today for the Save the Bryant Public Library. Go ahead.
Last fall, I asked my class if there were any students who had never read a book. And one of my students raised her hand, and I said, what's the deal? She said, oh, I get bored. I've never found a book that interests me. And I said, I'll pay you $100 to read a book. And another, and she said, oh, I don't know. I'm busy. And another student said, I have the perfect book for you. That book was A Boy Called It. Well, this student said, oh, we'll see. Well, last day of class, I said, did you read the book? She said, I did. I said, did you read the report that I asked you to write? She said, yeah, I did. I said, will you ever read another book? She said, oh, yes, I'm going over to the library right now to get the sequel. Now, that was one of the most joyous days of my life.
Did you have to pay the $100?
I did.
Oh.
And this is on an adjunct faculty salary, too. Amazing, Glenn.
Well, we didn't pay our electrical bill that month. So the more removed young people are from books, the greater the likelihood that they will never fall in love with reading, as I think the student has. We want a literate culture. We want our young people to read. And I believe that branch libraries bring people closer to books. Where are our values? The city is facing dire financial circumstances. I fear that unless revenue is provided to libraries, there will be a loss of our branch libraries. Perhaps the way to stop the closing of the branch libraries is to have a millage in perpetuity to save all of Dearborn's libraries. I admire the way that the supporters of Dearborn Pools have come together to save Dearborn's pools. Let us now join forces to save all of what is still special about Dearborn.
Thank you very much, Glenn. That was a brilliant presentation. I can only add that in terms of books, and my first master's degree was in comparative literature, which is sort of the study of many different national literatures around the world, and so read a lot of books. The simple fact is a lot of people respond and say, well, I get everything I need from television. I get everything I need from the Internet. It's just not true, folks. There's many more books, many more ideas out there in public libraries, and each book goes in depth. They go deeply into either telling a wonderful, significant literary story, works of art, or nonfiction, give you the real background on the stories and the issues so that you can think through some of the problems and some of the situations we have today and apply that knowledge. But you cannot get that in-depth knowledge or that variety of opinions from television. And on the Internet, you know, you're sort of stuck with whatever site you've already found. A lot of sites have very low credibility. They're all opinion, which means somebody off the top of his head has written them without too much research. And so the information, the knowledge is in these libraries. We need to maintain them. There is no way electronically that it can happen today, maybe someday in the future. But my fondest memories of college is the hours I spent every day actually going through the libraries, going through what they call walking the stacks, going through the areas where these books are up. They're usually by subject or category, And so you're able to browse and find ideas in depth, a wide variety of ideas that you may have never found out before. And it's just a wonderful experience. So I guess my final point about books is there's a special relationship to a book. Your mind has to be working when you're reading. For some people, that hurts. But if you have to stay critically aware in order to make the words come alive or the story to come alive, in order to, you are constantly, your brain is piecing together that new information, generating pictures, images, and connecting it with your prior experience. Watching movies and TV, you're pretty much passive. Some people watch television in an active mode, but most people don't. They just let it happen to them. They let that picture, just image, just wash over them. And it can be relaxing. It certainly is distracting. I don't think it really helps critical thinking. It doesn't help grow you as an individual. So that's my own soapbox comment about the importance of books. And where are you going to find them for free but at a public library? You know, Borders had a big success over the last 20 years, not so much anymore since they're closed many locations. They are a commercial. They were a commercial bookstore, and they thought of, why don't we provide places for people to come in, sit down, and maybe read the books and have a cup of coffee. Eventually, we assume not only buying the coffee, they're going to buy the books or the magazines, too. And, of course, even in those days, 20 years, I'm thinking, isn't that what a public library does, except maybe the coffee? I mean, you can come in, you browse, you sit down, but you don't have to buy. You take it home and borrow it. And only, you know, a public budget can share those costs appropriately for everyone. I remember the magazine collection, which has now been reduced at the Centennial Library. Shelves and shelves, stacks and stacks of current magazines and the past issues. Must have had 300-400 current subscriptions. Information of all kinds. You couldn't even find that variety of information, current information, at most bookstores that remain. They have 50 or 60 magazines that they carry. And it's all available free. So I have a great deal of difficulty today finding that same kind of information. I've had to find a way to subscribe to a lot of magazines myself at my own home. And that's, at a certain point, you just can't afford anymore. So books are essential. Reading is essential. And it will always be. And public library is just the logical way for any governmental agency to spread that resource. Public education, fine, too. That's great. But we need the books that anybody, whether they're in school or not, can come and access, as well as the current magazine. So we just want to emphasize that I hope there will, I hope all the efforts of Save the Bryan Library Committee are going to be successful, but all the community on this and the other budget cut issues need to, if they haven't had their voice heard before, either email Mayor O'Reilly in Dearborn, cityofdearborn.org, about their feelings on this, or get to the public hearing Monday night, 6 o'clock, Council Chambers, Dearborn City Hall, Schaefer, Michigan. Schaefer, Michigan? Yes, it is. Okay. And give the wrong location. Where's City Hall? No. And because that's the last chance. Now, the City Council is going to decide the budget cuts and vote on it. Make it final Tuesday. And so this is the last chance if people haven't had a chance to express their opinion. And it's one of those things, folks, you might want to get out there in person and show your support in one or several of the issues that the council is bringing up. Community response can make an amazing effect. I'm just one person. One person can have a tremendous effect. 5 or 10, it's just exponential, the increase in effect that a few more people can have. And it doesn't have to be a majority showing up, but I agree with you, too. To save our very essential community resources that are so wonderful in Dearborn, I'm all in favor of the partial millage that they're going to be voting on. They're going to be voting because they have the power to go from like 13.5 to 15 mils. But that's because, we're so deeply down that the city needs money for everything. But additional millage, probably going to be something that one way or the other will have to be voted on by people maybe in November. But how much that will be and what it's earmarked for, we can't know yet. But only active citizens like yourself, Mary Jo Duravage, who is sort of the person I think that formed the Save the Bryant Library, so significant, so essential in these efforts to get the word out and to get our elected representatives well-informed about how we feel. Any final thoughts, Glenn, about this?
You just put the exclamation point on everything that I believe in. God bless you.
As I said, I'll see you around the college. We part-timers have to stick together, right? Okay. Thanks so very much for being on the new WHFR Journal today. Glenn O'Cray, speaking for Save the Bryant Library. In fact, save all the libraries, branch or central or whatever, folks. You heard our point. You can go to the WHFR.fm website. And after today's show at 2 o'clock, you can download the show, play it back for your friends, play it for your elected representatives if you have to. Dennis, we need to cover some other major stories of the day. We're hoping to have someone speak for Save the Dearborn Pools here today. Save our small pools, at least. If they don't come, we'll make a plug for them.
Absolutely. And as you were talking to Glenn, I mean, this Monday night there, that's when a lot of these things are being decided.
The discussion is Monday. The decision will be Tuesday.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, people I talked to from the Save Our Small Pools, specifically Kristen Taylor, said, you know, let's, and we're hoping a representative, like you said, will come here today. At the same time, I mean, that's the day. That's the day that they have to make a lot of decisions. So, you know, and that's why we're here, I think, right? To give people the information. What do you have for them?
Always. Well, from the Dearborn Press and Guide last Sunday, that's the May 29th edition, there's a story that actually is about the same story that was in the Times Herald this Wednesday, except their headlines seem extremely contradictory. Maybe you, as an editor of our mirror newspaper, the school, can explain how this happens after I read the headlines. The Dearborn Press and Guide headline from last Sunday said, federal court rules against the city of Dearborn's Arab Fest leaflet restrictions. And then the title in the Dearborn Times Herald, from June 1st, 2 days ago, appeals court rules for the city of Dearborn, in leaflet distribution case. How can that happen?
Well, I think we both realized after we read a little bit into the article that there was more than one topic on the table being considered. And in one case, you could say that clearly the city won. And with the other argument, it looks like the city lost. But what was at stake here was the leaflet restrictions. And I know that you went into depth on that article.
Yeah. Well, the problem, which was it 2 years ago? No, 2009. Yeah, 2 years ago, was when Christian pastor George Saig, I think that pronunciation, S-A-I-E-G, he and his group, which actually, I didn't know, he's a California native. I don't know if he lives in this area, but he says he's a California native. Like at least he was born in California. He attended the Arab Fest from 2004 to 2008 with anywhere between 90 and 120 volunteers to distribute leaflets during that Arab Fest, International Arab Fest, along Warren Avenue sidewalks. Well, police stopped him from doing that in 2009, and he appealed that. And the ruling basically says, in this one aspect of the ruling, is that he and others are able to hand out leaflets, pamphlets, on the streets of Warren Avenue during this fest and similar sort of fest in the future. The city said, no, we control the whole area. The court said, if the businesses of Warren Avenue are open during the fest, then the public access on those sidewalks is free speech territory. You can hand out things there. And so it's interesting, though, that if all the businesses on Warren closed, but maybe set up a tent or a table in front, then he could not, or anyone else, could not pamphlet, because that would make the whole area this special festival event. But if the businesses have their storefronts open for business, and the public sidewalks are free speech areas, then kind of interesting.
And what was that was the Press and Guide that had that headline. But there were other aspects that the court ruled against, or for the city, I should say.
Right. Well, there were three issues involved at the time, and the city actually did win on 2 out of 3 of the issues in the case. I'm reading through the Times Herald here. However, the court in a 2-to-1 decision also said that due to the unique characteristics of a particular festival, that the festival, continued on 8A, rules should not have restricted SAIG from distributing religious leaflets on the public sidewalks within the area designated for the festival, which is the street part. Okay? So he could not do it on the street, but he could do it on the sidewalks.
Okay.
Because the businesses are open. And the appeals court cited the fact that sidewalks are kept open for activity not related to the festival during the 3-day event. And so everybody's going to probably abide by it. We don't know if the city will appeal again or not. I think there was a small point is that SAIG and his group can ask for just sort of a token amount for court costs if they wish to have it, since they won 1 out of 3 of the issues of the city. But they said that amount is so small, it might be $50, $100 or something. It's not really a civil court punishment of any sort. Okay. So we're looking forward to that. That's a couple weeks from now. And where's Dennis when we need him? He just walked away. We have a special guest coming who's going to be speaking, and we're sitting here live at the Dearborn Library, as long as it's still functioning, although closed today thanks to city budgetary cutbacks. I guess they figure nobody wants to go to the library on a Friday in the summer. That's just wrong, of course. But here we are broadcasting live from our HFCC tent that's right behind the Bryan Public Library today. And we're welcoming a guest from, the Green Dearborn contingent, if you will. Okay, Jenny Dunn. And Jenny, I've gone to some of the Dearborn Sustainability meetings that we've had monthly since January, maybe last year too. Dennis Reimar is my news director here. He's also attended several of these. This is sort of, would you say, a tangential or a spinoff activity? How did the idea for, we're talking folks here about the Dearborn Cares Festival, each of those letters means something, which is going to happen in just about 2 weeks, Friday through Sunday, June 24th to 26th, 3 weeks.
Exactly. This is a spinoff of the roundtables. The roundtables were a conversation really with different people in the community to just how are we going to move Dearborn forward and build a movement that is sustainable. We want to have clean water. We want to have a healthy community. We want to have access to healthy, good food. And in that conversation, we're just talking to people and raising awareness. And the festival was actually Marianne Bayer's idea, just to do some weekend activity to get more people involved. It's hard to get word out. So a public event like that was just kind of where we wanted to go. And then Maureen McElrath with the Going Green Foundation, she has that sustainable farm behind Long Elementary School.
Aha, uh-huh. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, you got to get out there, off the Telegraph, down New York Street.
This is a lady, and I know that you weren't there when she first presented it. She couldn't make that particular roundtable. But if I'm not mistaken, this the garden that she Maureen had started, it is getting so, it's such a big job now. Isn't that her full-time gig now?
Yeah, she's out there. She was watering the plants because all of a sudden we had 3 days of sunshine. So she had to get out there and do some irrigation. She's got a program with some students get growing. And so families with their kids are out there just learning how to farm. And she got a whole bunch of dirt from Fordland. So she expanded a lot this spring. So she's pretty busy with that farm. But in partnership with the Going Green Foundation and the Sustainability Coalition, we have been planning and talking to sponsors for the last month and a half. We have a lot of support in the community to provide food and finances. So there's going to be a lot going on. We were talking to the city yesterday. We're having an outdoor movie on Friday night. So as soon as it gets dark enough for us to see the screen, we're going to see No Impact Man. And then the League of Women Voters is donating a bunch of organic beef for our barbecue on Saturday night. So there's just a lot going on. So there's different aspects to this. We've got free public events all weekend, but we also have the Crowley Park campout, and that's why we got all the food, because we're not going to be selling food to people who come and go, but the campers, the people who buy a festival pass for $50, do the pizza party, the barbecue, the picnic, and all the activities, including swimming at the pool, is all included for the $50.
Well, let me just summarize for people. They're really excited now. The Dearborn Cares Festival, what's the letters stand for? C-A-R-E-S?
Community Action for a Renewed Environment and Sustainability.
Great. And it's going to be Friday through Sunday, June 24th through 26th. All of it is at Crowley Park in West Dearborn?
Yeah, right off the Telegraph at Oxford. It's where we have all the soccer tournaments and such. But there's also a 5K run-walk going on Saturday morning. So for right now, we're doing $15 registrations. They need to go to our website, DearbornCaresFestival.org, and print off a registration form, and they can mail that in. We're getting ready to order the T-shirts, so we want to know kind of how many shirts to get, but we'll have a few extra for last-minute registration.
Just reading down the brochure here in front of me, again, there's the campout you mentioned. Is that just Friday night or Friday and Saturday?
It's all weekend. We're going to have a light breakfast on Sunday, have some games for the kids while everybody packs up their tent.
Okay. It says picnics and games. You said some of the food is going to be free?
Well, we're not charging for food. So for people who come and buy the festival pass, we're planning to feed them Friday through Sunday. If we have leftovers, like Lapita's giving us a bunch of sandwiches, Good Times Cafe is giving us some food, then if there's leftovers and people are hungry, you know, we'll feed people. It's not a big deal. We have resources.
Swimming is an activity here. Is there a pool at Crowley?
Yeah, there is a pool, and it's still open this year, so we're really glad about that. And the festival pass holders, for the $50, they're going to get a swim pass, and we'll cover their swimming. But people can pay at the gate, too. If they want to come, bring a picnic on Saturday and just join in the fun. So it's open to the public, and there's a lot for everybody to just come and do with them.
Another, again, there's so much happening. You got to, folks, take your family down there and just take a look. One of the 3 days, June 24th to 26th, at Crowley Park in West Dearborn area. Actually, it's Westwood and Oxford Street, just east of Telegraph. Oxford Road, it's west of Telegraph, excuse me. Okay, it's west of Telegraph, so I haven't been there for a while. Oh, I see Telegraph on the map here, yeah, okay. So it's about, looks like about six intersections west of Telegraph on Oxford Street.
Yeah, the 7-Eleven is at Oxford and Telegraph, just south of Michigan Avenue.
Okay. It's going to be a bike parade. Is that little kids riding their bikes somewhere?
Yeah, there is going to be a bike parade. We're actually going to try to decorate the bikes with recycled materials and have a little bit of fun. You know, the Dearborn Animal Shelter is having Vital Fitness also Saturday morning. So talk to friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter and see what they're, it's sort of a separate event that what we're sharing the park on Saturday morning, and they're doing some dog walking around the park too. So.
DearbornCaresFestival.org is the website. You can get registration, more information there. It's going to be Friday through Sunday, June 24th to 26th at Crowley Park. And now I know it's west of Telegraph off Oxford. Okay. Yeah. 5K run walk. How many miles is that? Is that 3 miles?
3.1.
And when? Which day?
That Saturday morning, starts at 8:30. We'd like you to register beforehand. So if you don't register before Saturday morning, can you get there at 7:30, get your race packet, and get situated?
What kind of, I used to race these kinds of things very badly, but very slowly. But is it just around like an eighth of a mile oval, or probably have sort of a walking path that, you know, goes left and right? And
well, we mapped it out. There is a track, but we're not just doing loops because that's kind of boring, right? So we're going to start at the gazebo, go through kind of the treed area in the center of the park, go out to where the soccer fields are, come back around the back of the park and behind the school, and then where the pool is, that's actually called Westwood Ross Park. So there'll be some sunny areas and some shady areas, and just watch out for the walkers and the dogs.
Dearborn Cares Festival, Friday through Sunday, June 24th to 26th. And, wait, there's more, Open Mic Talent Show. and variety of music, and I guess fun is guaranteed, right?
Yes, there is some guaranteed fun. And open mic is at 8 o'clock. We'd like you to sign up at the website, dearborncaresfestival.org. There's a little form to fill out just to tell us your name, your email address, and describe what you want to do. Do you want to sing a song? Do you want to read a poem? Do you want to, act out your story? Whatever you want to do, and then we'll line it up. And before we have our DJ and such on Saturday night late. So we've got time for people to do whatever they want to do, but keep it family friendly, of course.
Well, I'm exhausted already. I'm going to have to rest up for 2.5 weeks before I can get out there. But that's the time we've got, folks. Dearborn Cares Festival, standing for Community Action for Renewed Environment and Sustainability. The money raised, other than paying some of the costs of the event itself, as indicated here, is it can be used to help the city of Dearborn install 2 new LED streetlights, which will really save money and they're long-lasting, through what they call an Adopt-A-Watt program. Again, it's just pathetic to me. The city could save the money itself. We would just have the money up front. You know, it's just unbelievable, though. You know, that's the only problem I have. I have to say, it is a journal show, and I'm one of the hosts, and I can say that. Would you know we're outside live? We really are. And there's people who are honking at us. You know, they're honking at other people. And we're right behind the Bryan Public Library out in the fresh air here with Jenny Dunn. Well, Jenny, how did you get involved in this? Give us a personal story.
Well, I've been with the League of Women Voters for about 10 years. And that is kind of a behind-the-scenes organization that just does a lot to educate people about what's going on in their local community, who's making decisions. Who's running the budget? And Dave Norwood with the Sustainability Department in the city of Dearborn, I met him, and I met Marianne Bayer and Maureen McElrath, and we just decided we wanted to make this a bigger movement in Dearborn.
Yeah, I give all the support, encouragement to the League of Women's Voters of Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, for their very, very visible efforts now. They're not behind the scenes anymore. And one of our former interviewees from Catholic Orchards has got a big truck here. Going to smash into the Les Stanford truck. We're having a lot of fun here, folks, watching the cars go by. It's a great location. But Jenny, thank you for all your efforts with the League of Dearborn and Dearborn Heights Women Voters and for the city of Dearborn. You know, we don't really have a good green festival of any sort in this area. I know a couple of years in the past, there's been a big one out in Rochester, Michigan, in their areas there, but that's a little bit of a drive from here, and we've needed one downriver somewhere. Maybe this can grow and expand or develop. Are there going to be some vendors there, too, maybe giving, or at least nonprofit groups other than League of Women Voters, giving information about ecology and green issues?
Yeah, well, Sierra Club's going to be there, and we do have different vendors who we're not charging for people to come. It's an informational booth. So, and the Friends of Dearborn Animal Shelter will be there. Anybody who wants to talk to us about displaying some information or product, it's DearbornCaresFestival.org. So, and also not just the vendors who just want to educate the community and tell us about themselves. We also would like volunteers. Because we want this to be a community event, not just something that, you know, we just come in and do and have fun and leave. We want this to be a movement. So if people buy into it by showing up and helping with the 5K, Maureen's trying to do some stuff at the farm. Anybody who comes in and helps a little bit, you know, we're going to feed them all weekend. So we're more interested in people coming and being a part of it than any finances. It's really about building a community that cares about the environment, that cares about Dearborn.
Be there or be square, or be there and just not prepare our community for the future that it needs to. I'll finish the point I was making about the proposed budget that may be adopted Tuesday without any modifications. I didn't see any major section of investment by Dearborn in green activities or renewal and recycling activities. I mean, other than the waste management contracts that they renegotiated to save some money, like these light bulbs, you know, for the streetlights. If people want streetlights, although we don't want them shining into the sky, but, you know, the LED streetlights would save the city a huge amount of electric bill. and they're not investing. They've come up with, oh, let the community decide to give us money to buy streetlights. Again, just like our former guest, just come up with a millage that's going to get what we need and help us invest in the future, new green alternative energy-saving approaches, and that'll get us all there a lot faster. I mean, it's wonderful, the local groups, Sierra Club and League of Women Voters, grassroots efforts, but why doesn't the city just do it? And, you know, I think all of us would pay a few extra pennies, and I really mean it's so minor, to get this new direction started. But you got to get the word out first. So that's a wonderful idea for the Cares Festival, Dearborn's own Green Festival, and it's going to be Friday through Sunday, June 24th to 26th, Crowley Park, located Oxford Street, just west of Telegraph. And hope everybody shows up and makes it a great time and a great informative time. Thank you for being with us, Jenny.
Yes. I believe with what you were talking about, we are the city. And does the city want to go green? Do we want to save money with environmentally friendly choices? And we'll show that by going to these festivals, by keeping the conversation going.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your having us on the WH4 Journal. Being with us today on the Journal. She had us on. Did you see that? We'll go back to more news stories here as Dennis is wishing Jenny well. It's really nice and friendly out here. We meet real people here. Imagine if we did this every week. Oh, I'd be exhausted. But people could just wander in and tell us their stories and their lives. I want to commend someone who's been hanging out here and helping us through the day, helped us get organized here. And that's Julie Welsh, who is with the Evans. Okay, well, Julie Evans, and tell us your background and your association. You're with HFCC Enrollment Development, is that right?
Yes, it is. And we are out here every week for the farmers market from 8 o'clock to 1 o'clock, and we really enjoyed it as well because it's an opportunity when the school is normally closed through the summer for our students to come and see us and visit us while we're in the community. And we love doing community events. It's a lot of fun.
From your office directly, I mean, I had several people come here and they had specific questions. How do I get my son information or my daughter information about getting to Henry Ford Community College, being in this program or that? And you've got brochures and information, you know who to connect them with. But in addition here, you have like special guests like WHFR, part of the college. Every, it looks like almost a full summer you have a schedule of a...
We have guests all the way until October. I did kind of move the ice carving club until October, so their stuff won't melt. But those are the type of people who are coming out. We have children's literacy. We also have Chef Click next week is going to bring out different salads. Serve up to the community. I've gotten really a great deal of support from the different departments to come out because I really love shining the spotlight on each department because we have an awesome school.
Yes, we do. I just because they paid me for 40 years, I don't have to say this anymore. But what a tremendous variety! It's something like 110 degree and certificate programs of one sort or another, as well as such. As well as a wide variety of classes in each area. I know that we have several in the telecommunications area in the fine arts division that are even accepted at certain four-year schools in Michigan for credit in their junior year. So we have a really, not just complete, but advanced number of classes in almost every area. And we're well-regarded nationally, I think, for 30 years or 40 years in terms of the Allied Health Nursing Program. And many other programs. Hospitality education has gotten many awards and created a significant effort.
I really wish, sometimes with the culinary arts, they think they have to go to a trade school. But we have an associate's degree in it as well as hospitality and art. Our culinary arts is getting cutting edge with, like, Top Chef. They've got kitchens now that have cameras. So you can actually, at the end of the class, have a CD where you present one of your projects. So I think it's a we're really staying on top of things, too. I think you could say that as well with the telecommunications, that we get the most updated software. So when you're walking out the door, you're ready to be employed, and I think that's really important.
Julie Evans, thank you. You're a great spokesperson for the college, and you are here talking to people pretty much every Friday. You or someone else from the enrollment development staff, usually double-teaming us here with a couple people. And you're here. You start at 8 a.m., or do you get it?
We start at 8 a.m.
Okay.
We're here until 1, and if you want information for friends, your own children, we're always out here ready to talk to you about always what the next step is.
And, of course, there's a lot of information there, but they can go to hfcc.edu on the web, too, and get started collecting information that way, of course. But it's great to get that information in person. And if you have a special question, you know, sometimes the website is hard to get that very specialized individual answer. But, again, a great website, too, folks. So, Julie, thank you for being out here with us and making this possible for WHOR today. We're just going to conclude with some more big headlines here for the city of Dearborn, but thank you so much, and we'll see you in the future.
Well, thanks for coming out. I really do appreciate it.
It's still great fun. And until the United Towing truck moves, we're going to have some interesting bells and whistles. Are they going to move us out, too? Is that?
I don't know. That, yeah, that's got quite a bit of room back there.
One of the vendors.
And AT&T is just backing up next to us here. We'll get a free phone from them.
I don't know. I'm not feeling as wanted as I did a little while ago.
Okay. They're probably upset with me because I'm using a Verizon phone for this broadcast. So sorry about that. Well, I wanted to mention to folks that Dearborn Heights has approved their budget. We were talking about budget issues. City of Dearborn will be actually voting on their budget next week, Tuesday. Discussion and comments from the public. The last chance is Monday, 6 p.m., City Council facility inside Dearborn Town Hall. That Dearborn Heights budget, by the way, Dennis, they did approve. It's about a 2 mil increase. So people be paying higher taxes. But their situation is they have a specific millage that they've endorsed, first of all, for their public libraries. That's going to be the same. But they have a millage that the voters out there approved to support the pensions of police and fire. And if that money has to go up to collect the needed amount of money for the future benefits for these people, then they sort of automatically have to approve of it. So that's how that's being covered. You know, in Dearborn, it's a crisis. We don't have any earmarked millages for police and fire or the libraries. It's just a general millage for the general fund, which these other activities are paid out of. And so fairly certain that Tuesday, though, folks, since the city of Dearborn just doesn't have any money, out of money now after this next budget year, they're going to approve a mil and a half increase to the general fund, which they have a legal right to do without a vote of the people. But that won't be enough for 2 years after that. So we expect some kind of millage proposal or proposals, perhaps, on the November ballot this year. And we don't know what it's going to be. Will it be earmarked? Will it be at a general increase? Mayor O'Reilly, back at his State of the City address that we featured on this show a couple months back. Let me give the people, I've got the date here. You know, on the new WHFR Journal show, which is archived at WHFR.fm for the 25th of February, 2/25/11. You go there, you can listen to that show, Mayor John B. O'Reilly's presentation. It's half an hour straight through. All of his words are right there. You can understand what he's said is needed. He said there that we'll need probably another 3.5 mils going to the general fund, approved sometime soon, like before the end of 2012, or we won't get through, or before the end of 2011. Or we won't get through 2012 and 2013.
No, because our rainy day fund is being used up as we speak. Is it
this? Well, yeah. Well, you always have to keep a small amount for emergencies, but I think they're going to drop down below 10%, as Dearborn Heights has done. They're going to drop down to about 8%, 5%, but spend all the rest of their cash. So we have always had a big rainy day fund in Dearborn, Some councilman said, hey, just use it for the budget. We don't need that much money. But in fact, we haven't had to raise taxes or raise millages for the last 3-4 years because we've been able to live off that fund. Unfortunately, the economy hasn't bounced back. Property values haven't gone up, so that they're just not raising enough money. But it would be very interesting to me to see if maybe some of the grassroots support might cause maybe multiple millage proposals to come up in the fall for maybe just police and fire, maybe just specifically for library support. The trouble is then you're playing favorites. If you have too many individualized earmarked millages, you know, some people that just don't want to pay any more taxes, and I understand, but if we lose all these services, I think they're going to be sorry in the long run, and so will the city be not providing what it needs, and there goes property values even further down. So I think it might be a mistake to have multiple earmarked villages, but does our city council know how to make a proper use the way our citizens want it used of a general millage that might be passed for additional 3.5?
Legitimate question. And I think that if you do earmark something and it doesn't pass, do you then look at the general fund and say, well, we can't pay for it because it was earmarked and it didn't pass? You know what I mean? I mean, it may never get paid for. And I think that's why the Save Our Small Pools, and I know we talked about Kristen Taylor's editorial at length, but the reality is that the citizens are taking it into their own hands. And some of the people at the different community pools are saying, you know what, we'll raise money, we'll do this. And that might be the answer.
Well, that's about all the time we have. It's WHFR Dearborn, folks. We've had a really exciting day. Actually, for 4 hours, we've been out here broadcasting from the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market at the edge of the Bryant Library at the HFCC tent area as their special guest today. And we're going to have to close and say goodbye for now. Hopefully Big Band Music is all set up, and we'll start up shortly back in the studio. And we want to thank Joe Sullivan and also Lisa Couture for helping us both in the studio and out here at the WHFR broadcast area. Thanks to Dennis Reimars for his very professional newsy support. Thanks for that piece of pizza this morning, too. I didn't have enough for breakfast, that's for sure. So we had fun. Hope you enjoyed yourself today. Back to the studio for more fantastic broadcasting. Highway 61 scheduled from 2 to 6 p.m. Today, so stay tuned.
WHFR, Dearborn.
When did this come in?
Just now. 1 minute ago.
Okay.